Tonight after The Voice Live in Great News, it's a powerful new Chicago Fire.
Yes, and you have to watch because someone may not make it to next week.
Wait, hold on. Someone may not make it to the next week.
That's what I said.
Woo-hoo!
You'll have to watch like everyone else.
Come on!
Tonight on NBC.
This week, three news powerhouses are teaming up to take you to the Texas border. An in-depth look at what it'll take to build a wall and the impact it'll have by land, sky, water. Every inch covered. Tonight on NBC 5 News at 10.
Hello and welcome.
Love Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Backline Report. We come live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf, but we have to apologize. I run a little late today. Traffic was ecstatic today, but my name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alveda. Fred, hi, how are you today? Hello, Fred. Fred.
I'm off.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. There it is. See, not only we are a little late, we were having some problems. So technical difficulties. Yeah, but every week we're here. So now we're here. Everything is going full force ahead every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to talk a lot about things. How are you today, Fred?
Well, Carlos, you know, it's May. Can you believe the calendar turned to May? The first 4 months are over. We're in May. You know what that means? The Players' Championship's coming up. TPC Sawgrass. Sweaty palms at the Island Green. Only the best players get invited at a $10.5 million purse. Carlos, I have to say, I really hope we haven't lost too many people here in the Midwest, especially in Cleveland and Detroit tonight, because we've got Justin Verlander going against Corey Kluber with the Tigers and Indians tonight. So I hope they download and listen to us later. I understand, though, if they're watching that great baseball game.
But they're excused.
They got an excuse. I understand that. But in the golf news this week, we're going to discuss the Zurich Classic two-man team event. It was a big hit. Jason Blix and Cameron Smith got the win on the Monday playoffs. Speaking of playoffs, Haru Nomura and Christy Kerr contested one of the worst playoffs in golf history. Note to LPGA, don't play the same hole six times in a row, especially if it's a stupid hole. I'm going to go into that later. And we're 1 week closer, as I mentioned, to the Players' Championship. Carly, let's go.
You know, I truly believe it's finally here, May, and I don't know what else is happening. I just know it's the two most important things are happening back-to-back to me, and that is on Friday is my birthday. And on Saturday, the Kentucky Derby. And on Saturday, the Kentucky Derby.
Two things you love.
Yeah, two things. I don't know if the Players' Championship, I don't know about that. I don't know. I was kidding with a coworker. He was saying, oh, you were born on Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, first man. Oh, man, Viva Mexico. And I go, like, I don't know what the heck it happens in Cinco de Mayo there, but I'm not from Mexico. I'm from Puerto Rico.
No, they copied Cinco de Mayo from your birthday. That your birthday was the original day.
Right.
They copied the Cinco de Mayo thing.
That's right. Hey, but we have, like,
two things you love, though, the horse racing. You love the horse racing, man.
Yeah, especially the Kentucky Derby. That's my Super Bowl. That's the Masters. That's the Master, exactly. That's the Master.
Yeah.
So, but hey, let's go and dwell deep into our show. And as usual, we start with the weekend backswing, where every week you and I recap the weekend's action, and you have the action on what happened on the Zurich Classic. It was back to a two-man team. So how about that tournament? How did it went through?
Yeah, if you turn on your set over the weekend and saw guys playing in a two-man team format, you weren't wrong. That was all set up. They were supposed to be doing that. I really enjoyed it, Carlos. As I've told you many times, I love playing a two-man team format. Most of the time when we're playing with friends, we pair up. If you're playing in a foursome, you pair up with one of your buddies and play against the other two guys, whether it's a stroke player, a match player, whatever. But that's a very common game, you know, among people that play the game. And I've long been a proponent of seeing this on tour. A lot of people don't know, you know, here in Toledo, they used to have the Inverness Invitation. And, you know, Ben Hogan, Byron Nelson, Sam Snead, all the great players, Gene Sarazen, they would all come in here and they would pair up with their buddies for a two-day deal, like on a Monday, Tuesday, or a Tuesday, Wednesday before an event. And so they would come to Inverness, and every year, and the pictures are all up on the walls there at the club. They're fantastic to look at and go through and see who was playing with who and what they shot. But I think this is great. They're bringing it up. But we're going to talk about it some more later in the show. But, you know, I'm normally not a big fan of foursomes or alternate shot play, but the matches moved quickly, and the strategy involved made it fun to watch on Friday and Saturday. Plus, the team's performance in the twosomes made a difference in the standings. You know, there's a lot of strategy in that. One of the favorite teams, Jordan Spieth, Ryan Palmer, went out fast on Thursday and were co-leaders after the first round, but they couldn't keep up the pace with the leaders over the 4 days and finished fourth. But that was a lot better than two other top-name teams. Ricky Fowler paired up with Jason Day and Henrik Stenson with Justin Rose, number one, number two at the Olympics there, silver and gold medals. Neither high-powered team made the cut on Friday night. Can you believe that? Carlos Fowler and Day and Jason Day and Stenson and Rose all missed the cut. It appeared that Blix and Smith, and Smith is a 23-year-old from Australia who looks like he should still be maybe in junior high school. You know, they looked like they were going to win. They had a one-shot lead standing on the 72nd hole, par 5. Smith had chipped his third to tap in range for birdie. The second-place team of Kevin Kisner and Scott Brown, they weren't on the green. They really weren't in birdie position. But, you know, weird things happen on a golf course. His chip shot from off the green was motoring about 50 miles an hour. Bang, hits the flagstaff. Jumps right in the hole for eagle. Smith then, probably in a state of shock, tapped in his birdie putt on the final hole. So now the score's all tied, but it's getting dark in New Orleans, and so they're forced to go back on a Monday morning for the playoffs. So a pretty exciting finish here on Sunday night. So they teed it up when they went back on Monday morning. They teed it up on the par 5 18, but no one could make a birdie. So they played it a second time. Still no birdie. Everything's – so they went out to number 9. Geez, let's play another hole. So they're number 9. No winner. So they go back to number 18 one more time, and this Cameron Smith, this young kid, finally makes the birdie that won the tournament. You know, this win is a very big deal for Cameron Smith. It's life-changing even. He was so overcome after the match he couldn't even express his feelings. Smith and Blix both reside in Jacksonville, Florida, and are members of TPC Sawgrass. Blix caddy got the two players together, and it appears to be a marriage made in heaven. This win, very big ramifications for the young Aussie. He gains a two-year exemption, entry into the Players' Championship and other big events, plus the FedEx Cup points can get him into the FedEx Cup playoffs, not to mention the confidence boost going forward. He made some very clutch shots and putts for the team. Another benefit might be some consideration for a spot on the International President's Cup team later this year. There are a couple other side notes from Missouri Classic. Brooks and Chase Koepka teamed up, brothers, for a T5 finish, which earned Chase a spot in the Wells Fargo field this week. This could be a big springboard for him to make the PGA Tour quickly if he could put together a strong finish at the Wells Fargo with the money made from last week, and if he could make a bunch of money this week by chance, he could end up on the tour. Gotta love this. The old guys, Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly, were T14 against the young guys. As a team, they can still get it done. And then there was the oddity, the anomaly. The PGA Tour actually gave out a slow pay penalty. First one in 22 years.
What?
Yes. First one in 22 years. Yeah, absolutely. They gave it out on Thursday. It was a one-stroke penalty. It was issued to the team of Miguel and Angel Carballo and Brian Campbell. Each player got a bad time under the PGA Tour pace of play rules. And they were playing with some spotters, with a couple PGA session guys, and they got a bad time and ended up getting a penalty. So it came on the par 3 14th hole, which resulted in a bogey after the team got the penalty. So that's pretty much it that I had from the Zurich Classic, Carlos, unless you got something else to add. It was a good tournament. It was fun to watch the playoff. I watched the playoff on Monday morning while I was doing some work here in the office. It was pretty good, but they really came out slow. It was cold, and they didn't get off to a very good start early in the morning. But nice to see Blix and Cameron Smith win that. But, man, that Smith kid, he really looks young.
He definitely does. And but, hey, they got the win to get it done. And I'll have some more on the Zurich Classic and its format because we're going to be talking on the practice range. That's going to be our topic about the format of the Zurich Classic. Was it a good? Was it a success? Was it a miss? You know, we're going to be talking about all that and whether we should see more events like that in the future. But, well, I'll hold it for then. But anyway, there was action also on the LPGA. And there, you know, it was a windy day that sent scores sky high. But on that day, the Volunteers of America Texas Shootout, very near where I live, became more a test of survival than a birdie fest. I mean, so it almost made sense that after all the over par scores were turned in, there still wasn't a winner. Finally, mercifully, the fifth shootout ended when Japan's Haru Nomura occurred on the sixth Sunday at Las Colinas Country Club. Nomura's 2-putt 15 feet on number 18 came about 7 hours and 20 minutes after she teed off with a 2-stroke lead. Nomura, she seemed on a roll in the victory stroll when she made the turn, leading by 5 strokes. I mean, who would have thought she was going to lose at that time? I mean, a lot of people might have been turning off the TV at that point. But then she succumbed to the elements that victimized the rest of the field. I mean, she bogeyed numbers 10, 11, 14. Then lost her lead with a double bogey on the tricky par 317. Her 12-foot putt for double would turn out to be very important. I mean, just minutes before, Kurt made the only birdie of the day on 17 with a 10-foot putt. Nomura then birdied the 18th with a 6-foot putt to force the playoff. But after spending 5 hours and 15 minutes battling steady 23-mile-per-hour winds with gusts of 38, both players seem defensive as if waiting for the other to crack. It's like, let's play not to lose. And neither did. I mean, they traded pars on the par 5, number 18, five times. Christy had her in the second hole, but she made a critical mistake and she couldn't win it. But, hey, for Nomura, the sixth time was the charm. She landed her drive in the middle of the fairway, and then her fairway metal shot rolled to about 15 feet of the hole. Although her eagle putt hung on the edge, her tapping birdie earned the trophy because Kerr missed her 12-footer for birdie. I really feel bad for Christy. I mean, she was trying to win consecutive tournaments. She had been on this going on about the Hall of Fame, and she has to win and all this, and her windows closing. So, you know, she's 39 years old, and she won in Hawaii 2 weeks ago, her 19th career victory, which came nearly 5 months after knee surgery. But Nomura, who at 24 years old, is tying Hannah Yang for this year's youngest winners, which we talked about last week. She entered the event ranked 20 in the world, but had posted only one top 10 this season. But hey, she thrived there in Irving as winds turned the usually friendly layout, because it is a friendly layout, but the winds turned it into a beast. I mean, her winning total of 3-under was 10 strokes more than the shootout's previous highest score. That should tell you how bad conditions were there on Sunday. And if you really don't have a clue about Nomura's previous two LPGA victories, both which came during her breakout season last year, came on windy tracks there in San Francisco and Australia, and she said after the third round that she had hope the wind would howl on Sunday because she likes tough conditions, so she keeps concentrating on safe shots. And conditions were so difficult that only two players managed to break par. The scoring average was 76.5, 3.08 strokes higher than the average for all four rounds. Nine players carded scores in the 80s, including Fort Worth's Angela Stanford, who shot 89. I can shoot that. Scores of 11 and 8 were posted on 17. 8 and 11 on 17. Can you imagine that? And that's par 3. By the time Nomura reached the Perilli's long approach over the water on 15, she and Kurt were the only players under par. That seems surprising considering the resume of her pursuers. I mean, Stacey Lewis, who moved into contention with Saturday's low round of 66, she started Sunday with just three shots back, but she opened with a bogey on one, a double on two, and a bogey on the par five, number three. She made the turn at 41 and route to an 80. Amateur E.J. Song, she started tied for second, but she also shot 41 on the front side and carded an 86 and dropped 38 spots into a tie for 40. In Bay Park, two-time shootout champion. She's won this thing twice. She dropped from a tie for second into a tie for 13th, 180. The only players to manage subpar rounds were In-Hyo Gee and Amy Yang. Yee rocketed 25 spots to tie for 5th with a 1-under 70, and Yang went from a tie for 44th to a tie for 9th with the day's lowest score, 69. Wow. Hey, other notable finishes, Jessica Korda, the only player to finish under par at 1-under, other than the two that finished in the tie, she finished solo 3rd. Song Hyun Park, at the beginning of the year, this will be the runaway rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Another solid performance with a solo 4th. Min Jae Lee, she finished in a pack there, tie for 5th. Soyeon Ryu, wow, another good performance, finishing a tie for 9th with Adia Yutanagar and Amy Young and Charlie Hall. Michelle Wee was in a tie for 13th with Inbee Park. Lexi Thompson and Stacey Lewis were T17 and Brooke Henderson T21. And finally, also Lydia Ko, we have to talk about her. She battled the pollen airs of Irvine, Texas early this past week, which culminated in a viral eye infection, forcing her to withdraw. I mean, she has dealt with eye irritation before. However, it did not force her to withdraw from last year's ANA Inspiration. She was able to proceed in that tournament using contact lens in one eye, which doctor says, no, that's not feasible in Texas, so don't even think about it. That infection shouldn't cause her to miss too much time. She came out on a shot 1-under Thursday's opening round, but that's only 3 fret on Friday. Left her 1 over par when she withdrew, so we just wish her to speedy recovery so she can be back on track pretty soon.
Yeah, her withdrawal didn't hurt her. Soyeon Ryu finished T9. So Lydia hangs on to the number one spot just by the slimmest of margins. But, Carlos, I got a comment on this playoff. That was just god-awful. For one, it was the same hole every time. That's just ridiculous, okay? Number two, that hole has to be the worst hole in women's golf. Every drive, Krista Kerr would hit the ball down in the middle of the fairway, and that hole was slanted so much, the ball would roll off into the right rough behind trees every time. She'd drive it in the middle of the fairway, and it would roll down into the rough. It was just absolutely ridiculous. Then that forced a cut. She had to hit a fade or a severe cut or a slice almost, a 200-yard shot. It's not like she's 150 yards out. She's 200 yards out behind the trees in the rough, has to hit a fade or a slice from the rough with water on the right side, okay? And, just to top it off, there was two bunkers guarding the front of the green. What a stupid design. I'm not sure who designed that golf course, but that is not a golf course for women. There's no way. Maybe the guys could play it. I don't know. But it was terrible. Terrible design. Terrible for women to play. Terrible to be playing 6 times in a playoff. I mean, that's what caused those women to play bad. Christy Kerr really slowed down her play and tried to slow play Nomura. I mean, that was very obvious. And that's, I mean, that is a, you know, that's something you try to do. You know, that is a tactic. But that hole was absolutely unplayable in that wind, and the way it was awful. So, Carlos, I was not a big fan. I texted you, this thing is unwatchable. It's awful. I couldn't hardly bear to watch it. The only reason I was there is because they kept flipping back so I could see the end of the match play, the Zurich Classic, because it ran over on CBS. So they switched over to the Golf Channel, so the Golf Channel was trying to handle both events. But that thing was out of control. So,
before you go to the to the European Tour, I mean, to the defense of the tournament. I mean, on the course, you know, this time it was the wind really that on Sunday blew things out. But because as I said, you know, this 3-under was 10 shots lower, I mean, higher than the previous highest winning score. So it wasn't like they were playing bad, because the previous to that, they were having 66, 67s, 65s easily. And they have played this there in for 5 times already, and they have done pretty, pretty good. I mean, but I think the wind made it really, really difficult. I mean, here in Texas, Saturday we had a strong storms passing through that were really deadly storms on the east of part of Texas. 8 people died. But the wind was really, really hard, really tough for them. So I can understand that they were playing defensive, and that made it, you know, unwatchable for what it was. But I don't think, you know, it's that bad as it seems to be. It's just it was a really bad day to play with the wind. And, yeah, maybe you have a point. I wouldn't play the same hole until the end. I mean, I would have done maybe 3 holes, 3 different holes, and then come back to 18 if you want. But that would be the only part that I really would disagree. I think the only thing that I would go with you is that, hey, yes, let's play another different hole, because playing the same one is really, 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 really weird.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And Christy definitely slowed down the play. I mean, she was roasted on the social media by a lot of people.
Yeah.
But hey, if they didn't put her on the clock, then, you know, she was under the rules of the. It's not. It's like the boxer that just doesn't throw punches and is just avoiding being hit, but he hits just enough to win the fight. He's ugly, but he gets the job done. So that was what Christy was just trying to do, in my opinion there.
Yeah, and I'm sure the course is okay. I mean, they've played there before, and they've gone along fine. I'm sure that. But that hole just does not lend itself well to keep playing over and over and over like that. It was bad on TV. Yeah, I got a couple of things, but I'll just save them for another time. Let's talk about the European Tour a second. They were over in China for the Volvo China Open. Alexander Levay won the Volvo China Open at Topwind Golf and Country Club in Beijing for a second time when he defeated Dylan Pertelli on the first playoff hole. Levay, the 2014 champion at the Volvo China Open, began the final round 7 shots back, but fired a final round 67 to get to 17-under and make South African Dylan Pertelli beat him. Levay wants to be on the European Ryder Cup team when it's hosted in France next year. This win should help his chances of making it. This was his third top 10 in his last 4 starts. He collected €448,000 for the win, his biggest check on the European Tour. Pablo Larrazabal finished just 1 stroke behind Levay and Pertelli to miss the playoffs. Carlos, your guy, Bernd Wiesberger, tied for 4th with Chris Wood. And interesting to see why Yin Yang have a good finish in China with a T6. You know, curious to see the European Tour having so much success hosting events in China while the PGA Tour is having difficulty with the Chinese Sports Authority getting events scheduled for the PGA China Tour. I'm going to talk about that more in a little bit. But, Carlos, that's about all I've got on the European Tour, unless you got something else.
No, Alexander Levy continues to play really, really well, and he's definitely one to watch there on the European Tour. Hey, but there was action also on the Web.com Tour, where third-year Web.com Tour member Matt Atkins, he rose to the occasion on Sunday's final round of the El Bosque Mexico Championship by Nova, firing a bogey-free 4-under-68 to capture his first career Web.com Tour title. Atkins began the final round, a stroke ahead of Sebastian Munoz, hometown favorite there, and never trailed on Sunday. He made birdies on holes 2, 8, 11, and 18, and keeping his card blemish-free resulted in a three-shot win over Munoz, who closed in 2 under par 70. Ted Potter Jr., Roger Sloan, and Austin Cook finished T3 at 13 under. Atkins, is worth noting that he becomes the first University of South Carolina Aiken alum to win in the Web.com Tour, and he moves to sixth on the regular season money list with that $117,000 prize. Atkins, who had just 2 top 10 finishes and 47 previous Web.com Tour starts, had missed the cut in 9 of his last 10 starts, dating back to last season, and there was no indication that things were trending in the right direction when he shot 77 and 78 to miss the cut at last week's United Lease Finance Championship. And now the 26-year-old is suddenly well-positioned to wear an PGA Tour card for the first time. Such is golf, Fred. One week you're out, and the other week you're in. Oh, wait. That's what Heidi Klum says in Project Runway. That's the wrong show, Fred. Wrong show.
You watch your runway? You watch that thing? Oh, my goodness. I worry about you. Sometimes I worry about you. My TV is permanently on ESPN or Golf Channel unless the Indians are on, and then I got to put it on Fox. So I'm not watching that runway stuff. Hey, Carlos, the Symetra Tour was down in Atlanta, where number 79 in the world, Nanna Kurtz-Madsen from Denmark, won over American Maria Stackhouse to earn her first Symetra Tour victory on Sunday. Madsen posted a 4-under par 68 at the Atlanta National Golf Club to come from 2 shots back to win by 2 shots. Stackhouse had led heading into the final round on Sunday, but an even par 72 allowed Madsen to catch up and pass her. Daniela Darquea from Ecuador finished tied with Stackhouse. Kurtz-Madsen earns the first place payout of $22,500, moves from 17th on the Baltic Race for the Card money list to 3rd after just 6 events. She has finished top 15 in her 4 starts on the Symetra Tour this season and earned $30,000 so far. She looks like somebody to beat. Looks like she's going to wrap her card up early, Carlos. She's just chugging right along. She got another goal. She'd like to make the Solheim Cup team. She needs to stay red hot to get an invite. And my question to you, Carlos, would you pick a Symetra Tour player for your Solheim Cup team?
It depends, really, on how good she's playing, really. And if it's a year, to me, I don't mind. I believe that you should develop those players. I mean, I like the format that, back in Puerto Rico, and I don't know, because I've seen this in other sports as well, but like, let's say in basketball, or maybe more known to you guys, it would be like when the Dream Team had the 11 professionals and one amateur playing, one college player. Hey, I would love to do that. So you can get that great top player, that exposure. If there's a player in the Symetra Tour that is playing that really good, I would give her that opportunity to really experience that and get developed into what the major tour does.
I don't know. It just seems like it seems like a pretty big stretch to me, you know, to come clear from the Symetra Tour. But if you remember, the European Tour picked Charlie Hall back. She was on the LET, you know, she had the runner-up. She hadn't won anything. She had the 5 runner-ups. She was really hot when she came up. And so they picked her, and she did quite well, actually, in the Solheim Cup that year. So, maybe it's the same kind of thing, but it seems like kind of a stretch to me. I'd have to, you know, I'd have to be convinced to pick somebody like that for sure.
I tell you, to me, if she's playing that good, like in that case, Charlie Wilson as well, if she's that good, I would give her the nod. I mean, they deserve that. And it would be also some incentive for those players. Hey, I want to do that good. I want to be that good so that I can be in the Solheim Cup. So,
The time's getting short to make the Solheim Cup team. So I would say if she would win, if she'd have another top 10, another win over the next 3-4 weeks, I think that's about how long they've got to pick the teams yet. If she'd get another win and another top 10, you know, maybe I would consider, but not with just what she's done so far.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Hey, there's action this weekend. Let's bring you a little here quickly. In the PGA Tour, there's going to be the Wells Fargo Championship. It's going to be played at Eagle Point Golf Club in Wilmington, North Carolina. The defending champion is James Hand. The tournament is being held at Eagle Point this year because Well Hollow in Charlotte will host, which has hosted the course since the tournament began in 2003, is holding the PGA Championship in August. Dustin Johnson is making his first start since he injured his lower back slipping on a staircase, which forced him to withdraw from the Masters. He's going for his fourth straight victory, which would be the longest streak on the PGA Tour since Tiger Woods won five straight from the 2007 BMW Championship through the 2008 Arnold Palmer Invitational. The tournament for years, one of the strongest of the spring, has only two of the top 10 in the world. Adam Scott, who's number 10, is also playing. Phil Mickelson makes his first start since he tied for 22nd at the Masters. Among past championships of the Wells Fargo who are not playing, there are Ricky Fowler, David Thomas, Sean O'Hare, and Rory McIlroy, who, you know, he got married a week ago. On the LPGA, the Citibanex, Lorena Ochoa match play. Match play is making its return to the LPGA Tour. The defending champion is Carlota Siganda. The tournament moves to May from November and changes format from stroke play to match play in an effort to attract more players. Top players had been skipping the Lorena Ochoa Invitational in the fall because it was after the Asian Swing and 1 week before the season-ending CME Globe Tour Championship in Florida. So that was a big stretch of a travel, 15 hours straight. So I think this is a good thing. ANA Inspiration Champion Soyeon Ryu, who would have had a chance to go number one in the world, is not playing. The LPGA Tour previously had a match play event from 2005 to 2007 with the HSBC Women's Match Play, and from 2010 to the 12 with the Sybase Match Play. The most recent winner was Azahara Munoz of Spain in 2012. With her six-hole playoff loss in Texas, Christy Kerr has gone to number two on the LPGA money list ahead of Lexi Thompson. Kerr still trails Soyeon Ryu by nearly $300,000, so we'll see what comes out in this tournament. The Champions Tour has the Insperity Invitational. It's going to be played at the Woodlands Country Club, the tournament course. They're in the Woodlands in Texas. Defending champion Jesper Parnevik, Vijay Singh, who's coming off his first PGA Tour Championship victory that he shares with Carlos Franco there at the Bass Pro Shops Legends of Golf, is playing the Wells Fargo Championship this week on the PGA Tour, so he won't be there at the Champions. John Daly made his PGA Tour Champions debut a year ago by tying for 17th at this tournament. The two-time major champion has yet to finish in the top 10 on the 50 and older circuit. Steve Elkington, the former PGA champion from Australia, who has lived in Houston most of his career, is on the field, so he's the hometown boy there. He has not played a PGA Tour Champions event since August of 2015. Bernhard Langer is a three-time winner of this tournament. His first one was an eight-shot victory over Marco Mera in 2007 during Langer's rookie season on the PGA Tour Champions when the tournament was played in October. So we'll see how he fares. Also on the European Tour is going to be the Golf Sixes. It's going to be played at the Centurion Club, only six holes in the St. Albans in England. And, you know, Alexander Levy, this is a new tournament. Alexander Levy comes from winning the Volvo China Open. He'll be here. This is the second tournament with that radical new format geared on a quicker game proposed by the European Tour. Two-man teams, just like it happened in Zurich, from 16 countries compete over six holes that win through areas that have plenty of fan activity. The teams play a greensomes format in which both players tee off and they alternate shots after that. The tournament starts Saturday with four teams in four groups. The top two teams from each group will advance to the knockout stage, where it will be quarterfinals, semifinals, consolation, and championship matches all on Sunday. The tournament has a digital shot clock of 40 seconds, with players receiving a stroke penalty for going over that. So this is quick pace. No one from the top 60 in the world is playing the Golf Sixes. Chris Wood of England, number 61, is the highest-ranked player. And finally, there's going to be also action on the Web.com Tour, where the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship, which next year moves to the PGA Tour, we talked about that in the final pots last week, is going to be played there. The defending champion Dominic Boselli is not there. But, hey, there's going to be a lot of action on that par 7 to 7,668 yards. It's a long course, right? So any comments on this weekend's action?
Yeah, just a couple of quick ones. Ronnie Shelton made 11 birdies to shoot 64 at the Country Club of Landfall in Wilmington, North Carolina, to earn the his fifth PGA Tour start of the season this week in the Wells Fargo as a Monday qualifier. Blake Kennedy fired 66, while Justin Lower and former PGA Tour winner Brendan Todd fired 68 to get the other final spots. Shelton finished he's only 21, finished T16 at the Barrel of Texas Open. And he's been doing pretty good. So look for him see if he can make the cut. Number two, the LPGA Tour down in Mexico. Gabby Lopez is going to be making her ninth start in of the 2017 season. She's a native of Mexico, so they're pretty high about that. As you mentioned, it's a match play format. One of the curious things here, where the brackets stack out, if Aria Jutanagarn happens to win her first round match and her sister Maria wins, they will play each other in the second round. That might be fun to watch. Also, you've got Lizette Salas playing Michelle Wee. So that'll be a good match. And you've got Jessica Korda playing Christina Kim. So you've got some good matches there to watch. Stacey Lewis is there, some other top name players. I think this is a great idea, moving this to May, having a match play thing. You know, this is kind of like the match play that the Dell match play that the PGA Tour has. So I think this is a good deal. And again, we'll talk some more about these format things, how they line up. We'll talk about them later in the show. But I kind of like this, Carlos. Another side note there in Mexico, they're going to have a Hall of Fame match on Friday with Julie Inkster, Lorena Ochoa, Sayre Pack, and Annika Sorenstam. So they got the big names to show up in Mexico City.
They do, and I'll hold my comments on the formats and all these tournaments for the practice end. So we have a lot to say there. But hey, with that, we'll wrap up our look ahead of this weekend's action. Now we have what we call the Par 5 News, where every week we give some quick 5 news there and tell you a lot about what's going on. And Fred, you have the tee shot as usual, so tell us all about it.
Yeah, Carlos, I'm going to talk a little bit about the state of the game of golf. The NGF.
Do I need the mute button?
It's going to be. I got a couple pages here, so. but it's kind of interesting. Information. The National Golf Foundation is reporting that golf participation numbers are increasing in the United States. Many of the trends in traditional participation, the total number of beginning golfers, those who are playing the golf course for the first time ever, rose to a record high of 2.5 million, surpassing the previous record set in 2000 when Tiger Woods was at his prime and bringing new players to the game in droves. There's an even greater interest among those looking to take up the game. the foundation study found that the number of non-golfers expressing an interest in playing golf increased by 7.6% to 12.8 million. I mean, that's a pretty good bump, 7 to 8%. That's 7 to 7%. That's pretty good. These numbers are encouraging for sure. Also, the number of committed golfers, and that's the group that accounts for approximately 95% of all rounds played, and more importantly, buying the golf gloves, the golf balls, the golf clubs, and all the stuff that needs to be sold, that rose for the first time in 5 years from 19.5 million to 20 million. So, you know, that's up, a little over half a million, 0.6 million, 600,000. When you factor in the 11% increase in off-course participation, so that's from driving ranges like Top Golf and also indoor golf simulators, overall involvement in the game is actually up. And, you know, Top Golf is driving a lot of this, Carlos, and I'm going to get into more of that in just a minute here. But, you know, these numbers are very, they're sounding good. I like the way this thing is going. Junior involvement in golf. The junior golf population remains relatively stable at 2.9 million, but the diversity numbers continue to grow compared to past years. 33% of golfers in the 6 to 17 age range are females, up from 17%. I mean, that's big. This significant gain is likely a result of increased visibility of the LPGA Tour and the developmental programs such as the LPGA, USGA Girls Golf. 24% of all golfers are women. Also among junior golfers, 27% are non-Caucasian, a percentage that's up from 6%, a while back, from 1995. And so, you know, developmental organizations are driving that, like the First Tee, the National School Program. They're in like 9,000 schools around the country. So that's really driving. I know here in Toledo, the First Tee has almost 9,000 kids involved in golf here in Toledo. So, I mean, that's a lot. The young adult category, 18 to 34, is the sport's biggest customer age segment with 6.2 million on-course participants. You know, they keep talking about millennials. These guys, they're starting to come out to the golf course. Another 3.1 million off-course participants, you know. So, I mean, this thing is growing, Carlos. I want to talk just a minute about Top Golf because the influence of Top Golf has had a welcoming players to this fun, social, non-intimidating version of golf. It's really driving this off-course participation number. Like I said, that also includes driving ranges and simulators, but that's up 11% in 2016. So all this is great in the U.S., but a report that I read the other day, the Wall Street Journal is saying that Chinese authorities have stonewalled the PGA Tour of China's attempts to host tournaments for its upcoming season. So we talk about, you know, finally getting some growth here back in the United States in golf and getting this thing turned around. It's the first time really since 2010 when the economy was bottoming out. And they've been trying to grow the game in China and Southeast Asia and all these areas, and they've been doing a pretty good job. And the PGA Tour is getting this PGA Tour of China getting started, developmental tour. Last year they had a dozen events, but they can't get approval from the China Golf Association to get the thing scheduled. So Greg Gilligan, the managing director of the PGA Tour of China, told the newspaper, "We're stuck moving forward. There's a lack of clarity over how to get approval." You know, they're not sure this is really a direct reflection of the overall golf climate in China. You know, the European Tour does well. I mean, some other areas in China are doing well with golf. So they're just having trouble dealing with this one, government bureau or whatever. So they're thinking about maybe going over their head, but it's become quite a problem, and they're not sure. They're kind of losing hope that they're going to stage any tournaments this year in China for the PGA Tour China, unless somebody jumps in and gives them the go-ahead, Carlos. So we got great numbers in the U.S. for a change, but China is, China is always a mystery. You just never know what to expect there. Carlos, still there? Carlos, got your mute button on? Carlos, am I off? Carlos.
Hello, Fred. Are you there?
I'm here. Where do we go?
There we are. Here we are. All right.
Sorry again for
the technical difficulties. Sometimes, you know, that happens. That happens in live shows. That's how you know it's not recorded. Okay? That's how you know. I was, when you finished, I was asking you, and I don't know if it came out on the air or not, but I was asking you that you were saying that the PGA Tour has problems in growing the game there, and you were also mentioning that the European Tour is not having that problem. And I do know that China has this, of course, they have this communist government, which really goes against anything that is trying to get money for itself, right? Other than and giving it to the people, which is what the government is doing, right? So I strongly think that the approach that the European Tour has taken there, which is very different from the PGA Tour, all take in and I don't give anything back, just by the thing of thinking that they're growing the game, is very different. And that's how they are getting things done, and not only there, which is what I'm going to be talking about right now in my news piece, but I think they're doing the proper way of doing the business of expanding golf in Asia, in Australia, in New Zealand, and all those places. And I'll get to the point by saying, you know, they announced yesterday a strategic alliance with the KPGA, which is the Korea Professional Golfers Association, which will see the two organizations cooperate closely on the development of the professional game in Korea. The alliance formalizes the growing relationship between the two associations following the opening of a Korean office last year and is expected to help create new opportunities for young professional players in a country which has experienced a rapid rise in golfing success in the last two decades. Earlier this year, the European Tour announced a strategic alliance with the PGA Tour of Australasia, and that one followed the success already of the alliance with the Asian Tour, which was announced in August of last year, and that one will see the two tours jointly sanction six events in this season. Much like those alliances, the European Tour and the KPGA will now work towards combining marketing and commercial resources to help grow the game in the region through the development of players, potential new tournaments, and reach the game of golf at the grassroots level. Korean players have been very successful on the European Tour down the years, and that is evident by the fact that two of the past three, Sir Henry Cotton, which is the Rookies of the Year, have been Korean. The rapid growth of golf there has been incredible, so it's an important step for both tours to align like this. This agreement will present Korean Tour players on the global stage. This is a big step in the right direction, not only for both organizations, and will play a crucial part in the development of the game of golf in this region. We already know the incredible success that the ladies have worldwide, and the men will get their shot now. I mean, currently there are four European Tour members from Korea, former BMW PGA champion Benny Ann, 2016 Shenzhen International champion Suming Lee, three-time European Tour winner and 2016 Sir Henry Cotton Rookie of the Year winner Young-Hoon Hwan, and former PGA champion Wai Yan. So I remember he made history 2009 when he became the first Asian winner of a major championship by overcoming a two-shot deficit to finish three strokes clear of Tiger Woods. Meanwhile, 13 of the last 31 major championship victories in the women's game have come from Korean players, with Inbi Park dominating recent years, winning seven majors since 2008. The European Tour has visited Korean shores on 6 occasions for the Ballantines Championship, which has a strong list of former winners: Brett Rumford in 2013, Bernd Wiesberger in 2012, Lee Westwood 2011, Marcus Fraser 2010, Sunshine JV the year before, and Graham McDowell in 2008. Last July, we saw the formalization of the partnership between the European Tour and the Asian Tour that will see two tours now work together to develop professional golf in Asia, mainly there in Japan and in China, and they have already a new joint office in Singapore, combining commercial and marketing resources to explore and maximize opportunities for both tours, not only across the continent of Asia, but also taking those players globally. That has proved to be already a success, as it has seen that working relationship between both tours go from strength to strength, with 4 events co-sanctioned by the European Tour and the Asian Tour this season, and 2 more are tri-sanctioned alongside with the PGA Tour of Australasia. We already saw in February when, you know, Perry filed that alliance with the strategic alliance with one of the PGA Tour of Australasia, and they formed there the ISPS Handa World Super 6, which was one of those 6 events that are tri-sanctioned. So definitely that alliance is seeing both tours combining all those marketing and commercial resources, but most of all, they're taking that game and that promotion to the grassroots levels. That's what the PGA Tour is not doing. That's why they are not succeeding in those areas. And so, Fred, to me, Perry does it again. I mean, we saw it last year with the PGA, with the tour, the Asian Tour, in February with the PGA Tour of Australasia, and now he does it again, doing it with the Korean Professional Golfers Association. So definitely is providing that perfect example of how their tour and its partners can work together around the world.
So you're seeing Keith Pell and the European Tour are going around and building relationships, and the PGA Tour is just trying to drive a bulldozer and run over everybody like they're doing with their new event in Korea and Asia. They're not getting a co-sanction for Asian Tour or anybody else. They're just going in and trying to – they think they got the best product in the world and say, hey, you guys want this, you need this, and here it is, where the European Tour is kind of going about it a little different way and offering some – you know, being a little smoother with it.
That is exactly what I'm saying. That's not the way you do things. Outside of the States, that's not how it works. They have to change their way and really not be so uptight. You know, you have to come down to that level if you want to get cooperation in your way. And Keith Pell is definitely doing a great thing. That's why he's expanding those strategic alliances that the PGA Tour has not been able to.
We know that's the American way, Carlos. Just kind of run in and, you know, take over. You know, that's our thing. We do that.
That doesn't work everywhere. That doesn't work everywhere.
Hey, Carlos. Love was in the air at Rory and Erica's wedding last week, and not just for the bride and groom. Patrick Harrington and Sergio Garcia kissed and made up. If you remember, Patrick Harrington said some not-so-kind things about Masters champ Sergio Garcia after his major win. Evidently, the two have not been exchanging Christmas cards over the past few years. Well, the two were both at Rory and Erica's big wedding last week, and with love in the air and the Irishman and the Spaniard announced their engagement. I mean their willingness to kiss and make up. Can't everybody just get along? Patty even said, our relationship is the best it's ever been. Isn't that wonderful? You know, do they have relationship counselors for the Ryder Cup teammates in Europe? You know, do they do that? The duo said they always bury their animosity for Ryder Cup matches, but they would go back to being unfriendly competitors after. You know, was Rory really being a Ryder Cup matchmaker by forcing Patty and Sergio to sit at the same table at the wedding? Well, the results seem to bear out the good tidings. After Garcia's massive triumph, Harrington had said he was happy for Garcia in his moment of glory, but recalled how he'd been a sore loser in the past, especially when Patty beat him at the Open Championship. Harrington also said, literally, the first person that I met was Sergio. This is at the wedding. And I have got to say that Sergio made it very easy. He was exceptionally good about it and was well informed. He had looked into the detail of the interview, of what I had said. He understood what I was really saying. Wow, hadn't he served his time? He deserved this, and you could see it. That's what he took from it, which would be good because that's the way it was intended. Boy, that sounds really nice, doesn't it? Harrington is just returning to hitting golf balls after a six-week hiatus for neck surgery. Harrington continued by saying he and Garcia would put their personal differences aside and Patrick would back him for the 2020 Ryder Cup captaincy. Now we get down to the rub of it. We needed to get everybody together so Sergio can be captain. So, well, not only did Rory and Erica get hitched, they also got Patty and Sergio to combine as a happy couple again. Isn't that just lovely, Carlos? Doesn't that warm your heart?
The next one I expect is for Sergio and Tiger to kiss and make up.
I would hold my breath on that one. But, you know, of course they are now, you know, Masters dinner. They're both Masters champs. So, of course, Tiger's got, you know, one or two or three more than Sergio has. But.
Yeah, and he has 13 more majors as well. But anyway.
Yeah.
He can still do some, but no. It was great. I mean, to see that finally the hatchet being buried, because ever since 2003, really, it just goes back to 2003 between them. So how it happened, I think that time has changed Sergio. Definitely, he's definitely a very different person, and you can see it. And like Patty said, when you saw Sergio speaking throughout the Masters, especially in that acceptance speech, you know that wasn't the same Sergio. And also, you can see like that big monkey or that big elephant that was on his back was lifted. So he's definitely at a great place now. And yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if now Tiger would come forward and say, "Yeah, I'm sorry.
That ain't gonna happen. No, you know, I wouldn't hold my breath on that.
I won't hold it, but I wouldn't be surprised if something happens like that. You know,
the times may be a changing, but not that much yet.
We'll see. We'll be okay. Certainly referring to today, May 2nd, when we said that. So we'll see.
Okay. Mark it down. You're gonna get a pretty full book. All the stuff you have to mark down from what we say here.
But hey, Fred, as the headline writers might say in English tabloids, Ian Poulter is one happy chappy. Poulter has seemingly lost his PGA Tour card when he missed the cut at the Valero Texas Open, falling short of earning enough money or FedEx Cup points as laid out by the tour to fulfill a major medical extension. However, a week later, Poulter received a call from PGA Tour Executive Vice President and COO Andy Pastner late Friday with the unexpected news that he was fully exempt for the remainder of the 2016-17 season, thanks to a clerical error of sorts. The prize for the best news that Poulter has received all year, he owes fellow tour player Brian Gay an expensive bottle of bubbly. The good stuff. You see, the PGA Tour changed how it distributes FedEx Cup points between the 2015-16 and the 2016-17 seasons, placing more emphasis on top 15 finishes and reducing the points given to players who finish from 16th to 65th place. The Tour didn't account for that when giving Poulter and Brian Gay, among other players, their requirements to fulfill their medical extensions. After coming up short of earning enough points to qualify for the Players' Championship, Brian Gay did some numbers crunching, though, and found a substantial discrepancy in the way points are doled out this season compared with a year ago, which was the season against which he was being measured. He brought the issue to Pastner and had a lengthy discussion with him. And Pastner then brought Gay's findings to his staff and eventually the tour's four player directors that sit on the board. After that, reached out to the PGA Tour to explain the difference. The tour realized the discrepancy for both players and chose to judge their performance against the major medical extension based on last year's point scale. Basically, the modified FedEx Cup points curve in place did not reward players finishing, like I said, 15 on down in tour events with the same number of points that the previous system did. So, you know, those points were modified as the tour did away with using the top 125 in earnings as a standard to keep a card, moving solely to FedEx Cup points from there forward. That meant both players had, in fact, fulfilled their requirements and were afforded their fully exempt status for the remainder of the PGA Tour season. Gay also earned a berth into the Players' Championship. The tour said in a statement, and I quote, "The spirit of the medical extension has always been to provide the same opportunity a player would have had if he had not been injured to redeem his card. And in this case, the bar was moved significantly." End of quote. Fred Poulter was clearly happy, and you know that he has 2.33 million followers on Twitter, and said he hopes some of the social media fires that have been stirred because of that, as he chased his car the last few months, not going to be extinguished. I don't think so, that fire will be out for a few more months, Fred.
Yeah, that's what happens when you change things. You know, you don't realize all the little consequences that they can have sometimes. And, you know, good for Brian Gay to calculate that and go back and look at that and bring it to the tour's attention. So by helping himself, he helped Ian. So it's a good thing. You know, and Poulter was so close. I mean, you know, 30,000, just one more cut, he would have had it, really. So yeah, good for them. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the USGA real briefly here. They sent out a joint statement this week, the RNA and the USGA, believe that a player's ability to read greens is an essential part of the skill of putting. Rule 14-3 limits the use of equipment and devices that might assist a player in their play. Based on the principle that golf is a challenging game in which success should depend on the judgment, skills, and abilities of the player, we are concerned about the rapid development of increasingly detailed materials that players are using to help with reading greens during a round. We are reviewing the use of these materials to assess whether any actions need to be taken to protect this important part of the game. We expect to address this matter in further coming months. So, Carlos, it looks like they're going after the players' books that we all see them reach in their hip pocket and pull out and look at before every shot and study and read and look at all the drawings and the X's and the O and the arrows. And so evidently the USGA doesn't like everybody doing that, and they're going to do something about it, by golly. So, you know, it just appears that this whole rules thing, the USGA and the RNA, they seem to be more proactive on everything right now. So, you know, look for more on that. Local qualifying for the U.S. Open at Erin Hills begins May the 2nd around the country. Top qualifiers from the local events will be held beginning the top qualifiers were held in the sectionals. Over 9,000 applications have been accepted by the USGA. 9,485 to be exact. The number of entries is the fifth highest behind the record 10,000 for 2014. They've accepted entries from 50 states, including 150 from Wisconsin, where Erin Hills is. They've got 66 foreign countries, guys coming to try to play. The number, you know, it's a worldwide game, without question. As we've seen, the Olympics is doing that. We just talked about Asia a little bit ago. So to be eligible, a player must have a handicap in there not exceeding 1.4 or be a professional. It's going to be in 113 sites around the United States, Carlos. And there's a list right now. There's 51 golfers who are fully exempt into the U.S. Open. Of course, all the big names. You've got the amateur Maverick McNealy is exempt. You've got Brad Dalkey is exempt. Are the only two amateurs that are in the field right now until the qualifying. Oh, I'm sorry, Scott Breger is another amateur. But Aaron Hills, Carlos, I'm going up there. I'm heading up there in the middle of the month here in 2 weeks. I'm going to check Aaron Hills out and give you a report on the show. Looking forward to that. One big denial, Steve Stricker, who was not exempt into the U.S. Open at Aaron Hills, sent a letter to the USGA, asked if, you know, for a special exemption, and the USGA said, thanks but no thanks. You want to get in? Go qualify. So that seemed a little rude of them, a little harsh, but Strick's got to qualify like everybody else. They're not going to let him in, even though he's Wisconsin's favorite son. So that wraps up the Par 5 News, Carlos.
You mean to tell me that the Wisconsin native favorite son didn't get a pass? And then you wonder why the PGA Tour doesn't get success there in Asia? No, there you got it. There you got it. That's it. They should have given him that. They have to.
They should.
They have to. They should.
I know, I can't believe it. Maybe they will. They might yet. You know, they might wait and see what the qualifiers are like. And they might have one or two spots that, you know, they've done that before where they do want it, you know, real late. But I'm really surprised they didn't get, because Stricker, you know, everybody loves Steve Stricker. And, man, he's a, you know, he's Mr. Wisconsin.
He's an ambassador there from Wisconsin. He's an ambassador in Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see. We'll see. Hey, with that, like you said, we'll wrap up our Par 5 News. Now we're going to talk about the practice room. For every week, you and I, Fred, pick a topic and each of us take our own shots at it. This week, with the Surrey Classic, the format, that two-man format, that two-man teams, two-man scoring, the format, was it one that you people liked? Do you think it was a hit? How about the two-zone and the four-ball, you know? Fred, go ahead, take it. And how about this format? What is it? Was it a good thing? Was it a hit? Is it something that we would like to see more? What's your take on it?
Well, Carlos, I really did enjoy it. I personally could have done without the twosomes on Friday and Saturday. Thursday and Saturday. You know, I kind of understand why they did that, but I would just as leave see best ball played all 4 days. I think that's a format that everyone wants to want. You get a lot more birdies that way. Was the format watchable? Absolutely, it was watchable. You know, I talked a little bit about the difference between twosomes and four balls. You know, and I mentioned earlier in the 40s and 50s, private clubs around the country hosted the pros on Monday and Tuesday for like a two-man event. Of course, they played for smaller purses, but it got the top names to visit their club and mingle with the members. It made everybody feel good. So, you know, and today, Seminole down in Florida, they have their big member pro when the Honda Classic is down there down there by Jupiter. And so, you know, they get the top names for sure to come out there and play with the members in their deal. Well, you know, should the LPGA have a similar event? Yeah, why not? They're doing their match in the PGA Tour right now with their match play thing. I think the Laureano Show is going to become a big hit with this, with doing the match play. And I think the LPGA could have a two-man team event that would do very well. I like the concept. What do you think, Carlos, about the LPGA and the PGA Tour agreement? Through this thing, they bring about that men and women team event. You know, they've been talking about having a two-man team with one man and one woman, one from the PGA, one from the LPGA. Wouldn't that be fun? So, and then they just announced this week, the LPGA announced, John Fondani, who's been on our show, that the LPGA is going to play, they're going to pair up with retired NFL stars in the event. So, you know Jerry Rice is going to be in that thing because he's all over everything you can get into. And then, Carlos, you talked about the sixes thing on the European Tour. You know, six holes of golf. Does that have merit? Can we ever see something like that in the U.S.? The European Tour keeps trying all kinds of things. Keith Feller, we talked about that a lot. He keeps coming up with all kinds of ideas to bring new eyeballs to the game. So are these things too gimmicky? Are there things that we really want to see? I like the two-man team, Carlos. I'd like to see it all four ball. I don't need the twosomes. And I would like to see the LPGA do some of this stuff, especially the two-man teams. I think it would be fun. And something, Carlos, that I think would be a hit, when they do this, there's a couple of the events that play in December where they play the last day. They play, I think, in the Shark Shootout, they play a two-man scramble. I would like to see that, to see how low they could go. I think that would be fun with really good pros. I would love to see Jason Day and Ricky Fowler or Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson, Jordan Spieth and somebody, Justin Thomas, for example, pair up and do a two-man scramble. Wouldn't that be fun? You could even limit it to maybe like 10 teams or 20 teams or something, and get somebody to put the money up. I'm sure somebody would do it. I think that would be a lot of fun. So, yeah, Carl, there's a lot of different stuff you could do. It does have to be stroke play week in and week out. I think it's good stuff.
I wasn't able to watch as much as I would have liked. I was this weekend really, there's some other stuff that I really had to do. But I've heard and read about the rave reviews from the Zurich Classic. Of course, there was plenty of late drama there. And, of course, they played on Monday. I think that that format's a hit, yes. And I do like also, like you mentioned, the European Tour, what they're doing. I still hear that a lot of people say it's gimmicky and it's not going to go for it. And look, I was talking about it this week with an acquaintance, and he was saying, but look at that, and on the sixes, nobody in the top 60 is there. Nobody's playing. So that's not going anywhere. I said, that's the first year. Once it starts getting more known and the players next year see that it was a success, like the ISDS handout there in Australia already, it was a success as well. The players said that they loved the format, they loved how it was played. And it just happened like the Olympics as well. There was a lot of players that didn't go because they didn't either want or didn't believe in it. But then after they saw how much fun the players had there and everything was so good, they all want to go next time. There is a lot of different formats that could be implemented, not only on the PGA Tour, but also the European Tour is doing it. The LPGA can do it. I would like to see, I used to captain a lot of tennis teams back in the island. And one format that I remember that it was very popular among the players, and of course I'm not talking about professional players, but among the amateurs, right, which is the USDA, was a format, a team format, where you would see players from different categories playing in one team. And to explain a little bit and quickly, is that, the USDA ranks the players according to their abilities in 2.5, 3.0, 3.5, 4.0, 4.5, and 5.0. That's the category. The higher is the better that you are. So we had players in the 3.0, the 3.5, and the 4.5, and the 5.0s playing in the same team, and that gave some players that would never play together or be able to see that kind of a team activity mesh and be rooting for each other and being players and people that you wouldn't even see. I would like to see, I'm just throwing it out there, would you imagine a team or players that would be maybe from the PGA, from the LPGA, from the Champion, and from the European Tour, making one team? Like that, combining all those tours, players there, making up that team, and each player, they hit from their own tees, and from different countries or something like that, but try to mix them together. I would like to see that format as well. I also like, the one and done, right? The match play. I love match play. To me, it's like, I know that there's the big chance that the big players will get out of the way early, but I love match play. I mean, it's great to see that. I really like all those formats. There should be more of them, more integration. Yes, I think that at the end, the LPGA and the PGA Tour will see maybe some kind of a skins game or something like that being played between them, or maybe what we saw in this two-man tournament or two-player format. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing. I don't think those things are gimmicky, but we need some change from time to time, because the same thing over and over again is just not gonna cut it, in my opinion.
You know, I think, I know golf executives are looking at stuff, especially TV executives. And if we go back to our discussion of how golf is going to be viewed in the future, as it goes over to more online streaming on the Internet and less network, I'll bet you will see a lot of these different kind of events come up, Carlos. And there'll be little tours developed for like a two-man scramble thing, a league, or they're doing this putting championship now. I don't know if you've seen this. And that thing has grown like crazy in the United States. They've had to add more sites. They're going to have like a national putt-off thing. So that thing will gain traction, and that will get space on somebody's Internet TV channel. Whether it's the PGA Tour or whoever does it, Golf Channel or somebody. So as we evolve, as time goes along, I think we'll see more and more of this stuff. Should they do more on network TV with the big broadcasts? Yeah, I think we'll do some more stuff probably, but it'll be limited. Stroke play is still the thing that people really want to see most of the time. So I'm sure that's what we'll have. But I love this two-man thing. I really like the two-man game, the Zurich Classic, and I applaud them for doing it.
Yeah, I think that it's going to happen. Just imagine going to that potting little mini tour, if you want to call it that way. One of the good examples of how things can develop quickly is just the Long Drive Championship. You know, look at what it has become already. And it started that same way. Oh, that's not going anywhere and all that. But look at it. Right now it's a big thing among its followers. It's not that it's something that it's a worldwide big thing. But, you know, it's getting its track. It has this annual championship. And it's also on national TV. So, you know, I can see all these things happening, like you're saying. And I wouldn't be surprised if that would take off. But we'll see what happens. Any final words before we move on to our final thoughts?
No, I think that's about it, Carlos, for me.
All righty. Well, as usual, I take the first final thought, and let me tell you, where his newly acquired fatherly duties, Gene Lowry, he originally quipped, "I have to go and pay for Pampers." But that all means that the 30-year-old athlete man is ready to move up some gears from being lightly raced, only 7 tournaments played so far this season, into what he calls a fairly maniac period as he seeks to turn his season around. In fact, Lowry is set to play 11 of the next 15 weeks after the PGA Championship Guadalajara, a stretch bookended by tournaments in North Carolina that starts with this week's Wells Fargo after the season's final major. His daunting transatlantic schedule features the 3 remaining majors of the season, U.S. Open at Erin Hills in June, the British Open at Royal Birkdale in July, and the PGA Championship at Guadalajara. So it's going to be, you know, it's not only about the majors, more than that. It's about arresting that slide down the world rankings. It's about getting FedEx Cup points on the board. It's about banking some race to Dubai points. And in effect, Fred, every tournament is huge now with the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth and the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open now part of the European Tour Megabox Rolex Series. So it's very important, all of those tournaments. And, oh, by the way, the Players, which is golf's unofficial 5th major, also in the mix in 2 weeks.
Yeah, golf's going to get serious here real quick as we get into June, of course, on the U.S. Open. And then from there on out, there's a lot of big stuff coming. And Shane Lowry's taking some time off, so he needs to kind of do some, play some catch-up. So he's going to be a busy guy. Carlos, kind of hate to end the show on a bummer, but John Sendon, a former Australian Open champion and longtime PGA Tour member, will take an indefinite break from professional golf, announcing that his son Jacob has been diagnosed with a brain tumor. Sendon, a two-time winner on the U.S. PGA Tour, revealed the news after withdrawing from the Zurich Classic last week to be with Jacob, who is age 13, and his wife Jackie. The 46-year-old from Australia will put his golf career on hold to remain at his Texas home in Dallas, where Jacob is expected to undergo treatment. Sendon said, "I have no timeline for my return to the PGA Tour at this stage. As a family, we appreciate the support and kindness that everyone has offered us at this difficult time and ask that you keep Jacob in your prayers and hearts." Carlos, this last story has a rather sad theme, but we want to wish John Sendon and Jacob and his family all the best.
And he will certainly prayers and a thought, so the best for him. We know he's going to get better. So, John, our best wishes go for you and your family. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, remember, we're on Roku TV. You have Roku, you got to see the Back Nine Report. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report. The number 9 is always in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. And we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shades.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
We all have those who depend on us. Those we care for. The ones we love. Every morning, you depend on NBC5. To watch over them.
In Denton County, you see the S-band radar.
With the largest team of weather experts, commanding the most powerful weather technology.
Texas and the severe weather has now passed.
Depend on us every morning. NBC5 Today, weekday mornings, 4:30 to 7:00.